Badger by Owl Light.
I salute the number of people I've been. All my dead selves in the graves they never had. Long gone, and no laments for the flowers that never knew a forest. The car quiet, the radio silenced, dead the colonial sound of the black man's music transmuted to white noise. Beyond the headlights, a vast black hole, rehearsing the day when it would finally swallow up everything. Round a slow corner, and there, explosive, coned in the lights, the number one growth industry of the 20th century. Violence.
Hold it right there.
This is none of your business.
4-1. I don't like the odds.
That's not a real gun.
Like to back your judgment? It will only cost you a kneecap if you're wrong. You, get into the car.
Yes, of course.
Now listen. I make it just after 2:30. And this is a very, very quiet, lonely road. It might be days before anyone discovered anything that might happen here. I'm going to get into that car and drive away. If anyone makes a move before I get in, if anyone gets brave after I get in, I'm going to shoot the four of you dead.
We'll get you next time, you bloody, lousy hippie.
Except for the bruises and the split lip, my passenger was standard international youth. Close your eyes and stick a pin anywhere on the map of the world, and someone with a beard and hair and Levi's will say, "Ouch!" I was thinking of someone with a beard and hair and Levi's who would never say anything again when my passenger's voice broke through my thoughts.
You may have saved my life.
The thought doesn't turn me on.
No?
In China at one time, if you saved a man's life, that was you settled with him for as long as he lived.
You don't have to get uptight about that.
Yeah, right. Another thing, there's a funny old fallacy. When you see four characters duffing up a singleton, the four characters have to be in the wrong. Direct me somewhere.
About another 1/2 mile. You'll see gates on the right, then a long avenue.
And where does that land us?
Balfin House.
And there it was, dropped right in my lap. Come on in, Trojan horse. We've kept you sugar lumps. Men on the walls of Jericho waving and calling. Now just you keep your shiny trumpets right in their cases. We're knocking the walls down for you. So much for me and all my fine scenarios of infiltration. The gates were high, wide open, and had once been handsome. The avenue was broad and long, flanked by mature trees. Just enough potholes to be interesting. An occasional executed tree trunk like a beached grey whale. A rabbit, bored with the usual predators, successfully ran across the headlight's beam.
Was that a real gun back there?
What gun?
Point taken. You don't seem to have much time for the human race.
Why waste time on a failed experiment?
Well, why waste time on me?
Sometimes I get bored not wasting time.
We're here.
I pulled the car up at the bottom of a flight of steps. The building was a darker darkness, except for a tiny light high up, like a small deprived star waiting to be asked to join a firmament. On the wall to the right of the enormous door, there was a huge red aerosol word. Brothel. We got out of the car, and my passenger turned to me uncertainly.
Well, thanks.
Tell me about it in the morning.
The morning?
The Underground magazine said you had 56 rooms here.
You don't look like commune material.
You don't look like a personnel officer.
All right, then. And you can talk to Jason in the morning. He was a personnel officer.
Beyond the front door, there stretched a hall the size of a skinny tennis court. Somewhere, a low watt bulb had given up illumination and now amused itself making the shadows interesting and weird. Scattered around were children's toys, with that peculiar air of suspended animation that only belongs to things that children use. Corridors at right angles to corridors at right angles to corridors. Then a door. He unlocked it and pressed down a switch.
Oh, when's someone going to fix this bloody light?
Yeah, when is somebody?
I told them at the last meeting the bulb was blown.
Now there's democracy. A simple idiot like me would just have put in a new one.
Yeah, you'll have to undress in the darkness.
Blind people have to do it all the time.
Yeah, good night.
He went out and I heard the key turn in the lock. A key in a commune, I thought. A contradiction in terms, I thought. Or maybe an amputated sense of property having a phantom pain. The room was as bare and cold as an old bone. It remembered too many winters. A long-dead architect had made this room a no-go area for the sun. It was a place of small, moist sadness and weeping gone unheard. Even the mice were muted. There were two beds, estranged from each other, as far as the room allowed. Army surplus from an army of Spartans. The blankets rejects from a hair shirt factory. As I got into my barbed wire bed, I could hear a distant, jagged sound like static. A door slammed like a blow. Feet thudded angrily down a stair and kept on thudding towards my door. Room service?
I'm sorry. I didn't know.
How could you? I just arrived.
He bring you back?
The other way round.
He didn't tell me there was anyone here.
Maybe you didn't give him a chance.
He's run out of chances.
I charge overtime rates for counselling sessions this time in the morning.
I can't even stay in the same room as him anymore.
It's a big house. Big enough to absorb a tired old cliché like that.
One of the cool ones, eh?
Just one of the tired ones. There are millions of us. One day we're going to take over the world.
I'll use the other bed.
She walked across the room, then the other bed sagged and she caught her breath. Perhaps at the bed's coldness. Or perhaps it was an epicene English poet described as the rough male kiss of blankets. Somewhere in the outside distance an owl screamed and some tiny creature died. Then there was a lot of silence, but no sleep.
Do you want to come in beside me?
How would that grab him?
He would hate it.
In that case, I would hate it too.
You're like him. You both still have a lot of ego to destroy.
My guru says it doesn't count if somebody else helps you to do it.
Your guru sounds like a ripe old queen.
What are you trying to do? Substantiate that big red aerosol word on the wall outside?
One of our ex-inmates did that.
Yeah?
Why the surprise?
I had a thing going in my head about hostile natives.
No way. I don't think there's one local could spell the word brothel.
Who could spell it?
He was a Jesus freak. His name was Jonathan Taverner.
Every revolutionary is a Puritan. He was about the same height as me, but slimmer. During our bearded days, we were sometimes mistaken for each other by people who needed glasses, or people who had too many. I would ask him if he had kissed any lepers lately. And he would smile. Once he said to me, "Do you need proof of God? Do you light a candle to see the sun?" In the morning, the girl was gone. The blankets lay on the floor. She had stepped out of bed and sloughed them as a snake sloughs its skin. I tried not to let that tell me anything about her or about myself, made up the beds, and walked out into the maze of corridors.
Down a winding staircase and into the hallway came a strange procession. Three girls with long straight hair and long straight skirts, grave, stately, dedicated with ritual faces. Victorian somehow. Each girl carried a loaded chamber pot with a kind of reverence, and I tried to guess which girl had been my unexpected roommate. The one whose utensil writhed with overblown painted pink roses? The one with the Art Deco? The one with the plain unadorned white china? They disappeared towards the back of the house, my bedpan Brontes, and I followed a smell of coffee, which led me into an enormous room. A young man looked up as I came in. He had a pale, oval, girlish face, and the shy manner of one who had never been, and never would be, sure of his welcome anywhere.
There's coffee, and I could do you some eggs if you like.
Great.
There are own eggs.
That's a good trick if you can do it.
From our own hens, I mean.
You the steady cook around here?
Oh, no. No. We're supposed to take it in turns. It should have been Simon this week, but he was out late last night.
He's still in bed, and he told you to get lost.
He was tired, and I quite like cooking anyway.
You're what used to be called, in the dear old dead domestic days, a treasure. Talking of the dear old dead domestic days, I saw a weird procession coming downstairs.
It's really too much, isn't it? Every morning, all of us with our potties.
Why?
Oh, it's Jason. He's suddenly into recycling, producing methane from human waste. I don't quite understand it myself.
Jason's the man to know round here, isn't he?
Well, we try not to be too rigidly structured.
But Jason's the money tree.
Right. Of course, we all chipped in, but, well, yes, as you say, Jason is the money tree.
Did he earn it, inherit it, or steal it?
If I told you how Jason earns his money,
yes,
he'd probably kill me.
The prospect did not seem to worry him unduly. There's always a pecking order, I thought. And if there is one thing you can never trust, it's a pecking order. Apex B, Bpex C, Apex B and C, B and C peck D. And just when you think you've got it straight, you find that D turns round and pecks A. He went off happily to make fresh coffee and cook more eggs. That was his niche in life, and hooray for him. One day he would make a fine wife for someone, or several someones. The breakfast room was at the front of the house. It was bare except for a table that could have seated a whole monastic order. Newspapers were scattered around, all with different dates. A seed catalogue, an abandoned letter. I never got that coffee. I never got those eggs. Instead, I got my last night's good deed come bursting in.
I want to talk to you.
Coffee, Simon.
Get lost, David.
I'm going to buy you a big yellow button to wear, stamped on it in black. Get lost, David. Then you won't have to talk to him at all.
What I have to say is private.
I have no secrets from David.
It's about you and Sarah.
Was that her name?
You certainly ask a big return for a small favour.
That favour bought me nothing.
You spent the night with her.
I spent the night in the same room as her. Get lost, Simon.
You're a troublemaker. I don't think we want you here.
That's hardly for you to say, is it?
Right. I'm going to report this whole thing to Jason.
Schadenfreude.
What's that?
An unholy glee at the misfortunes of others.
Yes. Possibly. And again, well, in another way, no.
It might be easier just to share the joke.
Sarah is Jason's wife.
Imagine being a house and being stuck with people. Century after century of undiluted people. And you're not able to do anything about it. Not able to run away. Your pride forbidding you even to fall down. When one wet day the bulldozer came lurching over the horizon, who could blame you for screaming out, "Welcome, friend! Where have you been? And what the devil kept you?" In an obscure way, I felt I owed the house something. Or perhaps more accurately, that I should pay another's debt.
Anyway, next thing, there I was, scrubbing that large red aerosol word off the side of the building. A tall girl in dungarees and a woolen shirt and heavy Wellington boots appeared and watched me and laughed.
I've become quite fond of that big, nasty red word.
I thought it might render the commune liable to prosecution under the Trades Description Act.
Some people might consider that a moot point.
Somebody obviously did.
His name was Jonathan Taverner, daft as a brush.
The name seems to ring another bell.
He blew himself up in London. He was on his way to plant a homemade bomb somewhere when it went off and scattered him over the landscape.
The special branch man didn't like me. The old guilt by association syndrome. I said, look, man, let's keep it all in the one bit. You asked me here to identify my brother. He said, what's that you've got in your pocket? And I told him it was an old snuff box I'd picked up in an antique shop. And he said, great, you can take him away in that. There was more than that, but not much. And ironically, his wristwatch, unscathed, time triumphing over terror.
Why are you looking like that?
Hmm?
You shivered. Somebody walking over your grave.
No, I was walking over somebody else's.
Come and see the garden.
We walked across a wide stretch of lawn, still unyielding with last night's frost. Occasional clumps of snowdrops and the early spears of daffodils. A path led through an avenue of tall trees, precise and bare and anatomical with winter. But the first buds were already breaking through, ready to refresh the skeleton for spring. We passed through a wooden gate in a high wall and entered what seemed acres of walled garden.
Someday there's going to be a big town up there, son.
Don't even say that. There might be some freaky planning officer listening.
You mean the early spring cabbages are budded? The garden's your chore, is it?
Right. Only it's no chore.
What's your name?
Esther.
And what are you running away from?
Why are people always supposed to be running away? Why can't they be running towards something?
Not so loud. That idea catches on. Harley Street will be choked with second-hand couches. All right, then. What are you running towards away from?
I was in films.
That takes in a lot of territory.
I was a starlet.
And you gave it all up for love of this?
A matter of job satisfaction, darling. I wanted a job where I didn't have to take the boss's fingerprints home with me every
David!
Night.
Simon!
Something's wrong.
We ran out of the garden, along the avenue and across the lawn to the house. A battered station wagon was drawn up at the steps. Three children had got out of it and were standing, crying helplessly. A girl with bright red hair clutched a little girl to her, and blood shone across the child's split forehead. People came spilling out of the house. Dave and Simon, two girls, a young man new to me. They stood around, not crying, but looking as helpless as the children. Then David took the child gently from the red-haired girl.
So what, darling? David will make it better. Indoors the rest of you. David's got sweets and all the things you like that are bad for you.
What happened, Sarah?
Bloody McAllister. He could have killed us all.
Oh, not McAllister, not again.
Yes, again, Simon. And what are you going to do about it?
When Jason gets back.
What then? Another stinking meeting and crap about non-violence, and that's my child in there with a bloody head split.
Look, Sarah,
I'm... Why don't you do something about it? What kind of men are you? Wait. Right, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to go and find McAllister and spit in his face.
I'll come with you.
We don't need your heroics.
Oh, shut up, Simon.
Let's go. We drove off. The hard morning light was incredible. The trunks of the beech trees glistened like grey silk. Chaffinches performed mass aerobatics among the hedges, still gathered up in flocks, still not trusting the signs of coming spring with its message to break away and form into mating pairs. Through the gates and onto the main road, every now and then she would glance at me, checking what she had missed, or perhaps escaped. You drive well.
Why shouldn't I?
You're a female chauvinist pig. Tell me about McAllister.
Pure lumpen.
Born here, brought up here, never been anywhere else. Battered wife, drunk. Very physical, nothing else.
Why are the locals so uptight?
They didn't used to be. We thought we had a good relationship going with them.
And then?
Then along came this Jesus freak, Jonathan Tavener.
He caused the trouble?
He tripped out one night and tried to burn down the church.
You know them and I know them. We all know them. The people who should be supplied with an instant do-it-yourself crucifixion kit and told to get on with it and leave the rest of us in sinful peace. I let the subject drop in deference to the sudden maxim I had improvised a moment earlier. This was going to be one of those days, if I let it. So I shifted the emphasis back to McAllister.
It's my turn this week to drive the children to school. It's about 10 miles away.
Isn't there a school bus?
The local kids started beating our lot up.
Charming.
Anyway, there's a straight stretch of road about 3 miles along. I was doing about 60 when I saw McAllister's van coming towards me. And suddenly I realised that was exactly what he was doing.
He tried to force you off the road?
He damn nearly did. I stood on everything and nearly went through the windscreen. Ginny split her head open, the other kids were thrown about all over the place.
Where do we find McAllister?
The pub.
The pub won't be open.
The pub is never closed.
As we came into the village, it began to rain. A small grey rain falling on small grey houses. And outside one of them, the pub, a small grey van. McAllister was standing at the bar. He was, as Sarah had said, pure lumpen. It had taken generations of selective inbreeding to evolve that brutal face. He looked at me, then at Sarah. And then I hit him. And hit him! And hit him! And hit him! And hit him! Go on, spit in his face. Go on, that's what you came to do, isn't it?
He hasn't got a face anymore.
She walked out of the pub, and all the way back to the car, she kept ahead of me, not looking at me. I was infectious, contagious, radioactive. Or worse, everything she had felt about McAllister reduced to a terrifying absurdity. The rain had settled in now, drowning the landscape, bleeding it of whatever little colour it had. She sat hunched over the wheel, silent, but not enjoying that silence. When the new dark age comes, the world will be filled with people like McAllister.
You'll have nothing to worry about in that case.
Self-sufficiency. That's the name of the game, isn't it?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Grow your own food, invent your own technology, do your own thing. Great. All nicely packed and vacuum sealed. Perfect, if you live in a vacuum.
I just think you overdid it a bit.
A nice, friendly violence would have been better, huh?
Jason's not going to like this.
Does Jason exist?
He exists, all right.
Simon said I could talk to him this morning.
He went off early somewhere.
When does he come back?
I don't know.
If you don't know, who does?
Nobody. More and more, we all know less and less about Jason.
When we got back, the house seemed empty, and Sarah vanished off into its emptiness. I sought out my room and lay down on the sullen bed. The room nagged at me like a hard luck story, a nothing arrangement of space, a piece of territory nobody wanted, all the non-ingredients for sensory deprivation. And just to create the illusion that something might be happening, I got off the bed and opened up my hold-all to find a shirt that was not freckled with McAllister's blood. That was when I found that someone had taken the gun. Property is theft, the man said, and I would not give him much of an argument on that, except perhaps to add the cautious qualification. It's always important to know exactly who did the stealing.
That was Badger by Owlite by Edward Boyd. Peter Tallien was played by Edward Judd. The rest of the cast was Esther, Diana Olson, Sarah, Anne Kristen, Hardecker, James Cairncross, Simon, Tony Robinson, David, Andrew McRobb, Jenny, Sarah Collier, Jason, Ian Stewart, Ivor, Michael McKenzie, Ginny, Nicola Ferguson-Smith, Police Constable, Crawford Logan. Technical presentation was by Michael Edwards and Tom Anderson. The production from our Glasgow studios was by Stuart Conn.